When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, Anna.
Hi, Andrew.
And hey, everybody else.
And welcome to our podcast,
Scary Stories to Tell on the pod.
It's a podcast about scary stories, urban legends, spooky things you tell us about. And it's two soft friends who met in George W. Bush's second term. Yeah, side bangs weren't a thing yet, but boy, were they coming.
Everyone was trying to dress like Condi Rice.
We were.
That was
big necklaces.
Big necklaces. Small blazers.
Small blazers. Yeah. And the tank tops went down to the feet.
And you had to be wearing multiple tank tops.
You had to, otherwise you got busted.
I did notice on TikTok that there are people who are just beginning to notice, like, did you know you can wear two tank tops? You can wear a heavier, like more form-fitting one under a lighter one on the top. And I was like, oh, you sweet summer
child. We know, you sweet summer child.
Do not speak the ancient magic to me, for I was there when it was born.
Yeah.
Speaking of the early aughts, George W. Bush era.
Yeah.
Anna, today's story comes straight from my high school experience.
Okay.
I think I may have mentioned this before. I hope I have not done this before. I don't think I did. We in high school had a frequent substitute teacher who was a tiny little Irishman named Mr. O'Mahony. And no matter what...
A ghost. Continue.
Very much a ghost. No matter what class he was substituting, whether it was math, science, theater, anything... we would spend the class with him reciting a scary poem. And the scary poem was called The Cremation of Sam McGee. And it was a beautifully performed thing. But once you've seen it two or three times, you begin to be like, okay, do you got anything else? And then he would transition into, he would print it out and give it to the class and we would read it line by line. And that was torturous. But I love the poem. And so I want to read it to you here today. Is that okay?
Definitely. Great. I do think you should do this like every 7 pods just to give us the real experience.
Every month and a half. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if I have done this before, which I don't think I have, I know. And I am consciously doing that for the sake of...
It's very Mr. O'Mahony of
it's
you.
You guys know Mr. O'Mahony. He's probably dead now. I hope not. But he was a very sweet guy. So this is a poem by Robert W. Service, The Cremation of Sam McGee. There are strange things done in the midnight sun by the men who moil for gold. The Arctic trails have their secret tales that would make your blood run cold. The northern lights have seen queer sights, but the queerest they ever did see was that night on the marge of Lake LaBarge I cremated Sam McGee. Now Sam McGee was from Tennessee, where the cotton blooms and blows. Why he left his home in the south to roam round the pole, God only knows. He was always cold, but the land of gold seemed to hold him like a spell, though he'd often say in his homely way that he'd sooner live in hell. On a Christmas day we were mushing our way over the Dawson Trail. Talk of your cold to the parka's fold, it stabbed like a driven nail. If our eyes we'd closed, then the lashes froze till sometimes we couldn't see. It wasn't much fun, but the only one to whimper was Sam McGee. And that very night, as we laid packed tight in our robes beneath the snow, and the dogs were fed, and the stars o'erhead were dancing heel and toe. He turned to me, and Cap, he says he, I'll cash in this trip, I guess. And if I do, I'm asking that you won't refuse my last request. Well, he seemed so low that I couldn't say no. Then he says with a sort of moan, it's the cursed cold, and it's got right hold till I'm chilled clean to the bone. Yet tain't being dead, it's my awful dread of the icy grave that pains. So I want you to swear that foul or fair, you'll cremate my last remains. A pal's last need is a thing to heed, so I swore I would not fail. And we started on at the streak of dawn, but God, he looked ghastly pale. He crouched on the sleigh, and he raved all day of his home in Tennessee. And before nightfall, a corpse was all that was left of San McGee. There wasn't a breath in that land of death, and I hurried, horror-driven, with a corpse half-hid that I couldn't get rid because of a promise given. It was lashed to the sleigh, and it seemed to say, "You may tax your brawn and brains, but you promise true, and it's up to you to cremate those last remains." Now, a promise made is a debt unpaid, and the trail has its own stern code. In the days to come, though my lips were numb, in my heart how I cursed that load. In the long, long night, by the lone firelight, while the huskies round in a ring howled out their woes to the homeless snows, oh God, how I loathed that thing. And every day that quiet clay seemed to heavy and heavier grow, and on I went, though the dogs were spent and the grub was getting low. The trail was bad, and I felt half mad, but I swore I would not give in, and I'd often sing to the hateful thing, and it hearkened with a grin. Till I came to the marge of Lake LaBarge, and a derelict there lay. It was jammed in the ice, but I saw in a trice it was called the Alice May. And I looked at it, and I thought a bit, and I looked at my frozen chum. "Then here," says I with a sudden cry, "is my crematorium." Some planks I tore from the cabin floor, and I lit the boiler fire. Some coal I found was lying round, and I heaped the fuel higher. The flames just soared, and the furnace roared, such a blaze you seldom see. And I burrowed a hole in the glowing coal, and I stuffed in Sam McGee. Then I made for a hike, for I didn't like to hear him sizzle so. And the heavens scowled, and the huskies howled, and the wind began to blow. It was icy cold, but the hot sweat rolled down my cheeks, and I don't know why. And the greasy smoke in an inky cloak went streaking down the sky. I do not know how long in the snow I wrestled with grisly fear, but the stars came out, and they danced about, ere again I ventured near. I was sick with dread, but I bravely said, "I'll just take a peep inside. I guess he's cooked, and it's time I looked." Then I opened the door wide. And there sat Sam, looking cool and calm, in the heart of the furnace roar. And he wore a smile you could see a mile, and he said, "Please close that door. Oh. It's fine in here, but I greatly fear you'll let in the cold and storm. Since I left Plumtree down in Tennessee, it's the first time I've been warm." There are strange things done in the midnight sun by the men who moil for gold. The Arctic trails have their secret tales that would make your blood run cold. The northern lights have seen queer sights, but the queerest they ever did see was that night on the marge of Lake LaBarge. I cremated Sam McGee.
That could happen. That could happen.
I've heard about that happening.
Andrew, that was beautifully performed.
Thank you very much. It's not as good as Mr. O'Mahony, but...
No, of course not.
No. But this is an homage to him.
This is an homage to the marge, like LaBarge.
You know what's funny is when I listened to this so many times, I don't think I really understood what was going on.
Please explain.
These are gold men.
They're moiling for gold, which moiling I imagine for is gold. Panning.
And I don't know. This is the Northern Lights, so this is Yukon territory, maybe.
Yeah.
And so these are co-workers who are looking for gold. They have their own rules. I kind of think of them as like ice road truckers.
Sure. Yeah. There's like a season.
Yeah. There's a little romance to it. And essentially this old guy from Tennessee, he's getting close to death, and he's like, "Make this promise to me that you're going to cremate my last remains." And so this guy is like, "Sure, I'll do it, 'cause I'm scared of breaking an oath." It did make me wonder, like, what is the occasion that this was written to be performed at? 'Cause it is like, it feels like an oratory experience, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe like if you have to cremate another gold man in the winter somewhere.
Yeah. So you can consider it.
So you can be like, "Oh, this is so crazy that that's what I'm doing right now."
I have an embarrassing thing to confess that. So Chris is of Irish descent. I'm of Irish descent. Chris's Irish cousins and family who still live in Ireland, they all know how to sing or play a song. Like they have their, like when the family all gets together, they have their instruments, they have their songs to sing, and they sit around and they like take turns and sing songs. My side of the Irishness, unfortunately, is the side that memorizes poetry.
But that's beautiful.
Well, it sounds like it would be. I appreciate it, but I also...
My Irish family just kind of yell at each other. It's not... We don't... There's no verse.
But my dad had each of us, my brothers and I, we each had a poem that we had to memorize. And then we would, like, occasionally at family functions, we'd be asked to recite it.
Had to memorize Per Duncan?
Yeah, he would do, like, although mine wasn't a poem. Mine was the Gettysburg Address, which is not as fun.
Whoa.
But it was nice to
what
know.
Were your brothers? You don't have to.
One of them was definitely If. That I think it's a Rudyard Kipling poem.
Oh, sure. Canceled.
If you, yeah. Sorry, Duncan.
Sorry.
And then, oh gosh, I think someone had to do an Edgar Allan Poe one. I'm sure somebody had a sonnet. My dad loved Shakespeare, so that was like a big thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
And only one of the four was gay.
Yeah, I know.
As hard as he tried.
Yeah, I know. That is, I do love my dad very much. His taste is so funny to me. Where one time we went on a road trip, just he and I, and he was like, put on one of the CDs. And I was like, oh my gosh, what CDs do you have in your glove compartment? And I opened it, and the most bewildering two CDs I can imagine. CD number one, The Best of Olivia Newton-John.
Okay.
CD number two, Adam Sandler's first like sketch CD, like his early 90s, like, they're all going to laugh at you. Like, and wow. I have a fucking snake, man. Like, I was like, do you listen to this? And he was like, yeah, I sometimes listen to it.
Oh my God. Those strangest. Were just CDs that he found. And he was like, these are the ones.
What I feel quite certain of is that I think my dad, speaking of scams, we were talking about scams earlier. I think my dad fell for that Time Life. Like, we'll send you 40 CDs every month. And it only costs
for
$600.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
It's 1 cent for the first 3 months.
Yeah.
Because also one time we do a Secret Santa every year. And there was a while where I think 3 years in a row, he gave different cousins the Waiting to Exhale soundtrack.
That rules.
Which he had three copies of. This was not shuttled around. So he had three different copies.
He got caught.
He got caught. And who knows if he got out of the game. I don't know. He might still be in it.
He's their last customer. Wow.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. I mean, so here's the thing about Anna. What's gay about this poem?
Everything. Wait, let me just make sure I know what happened. So he died of natural causes or of the cold?
I think maybe a combination.
A bit of both. And so it kind of implies that he's thinking about feeding him to his dogs.
It is kind of that the food was getting low.
Yeah. But he doesn't.
Right.
He cremates him. Mm-hmm. Now at the end, does he reanimate and come back to life, or is he just corpse?
I think it's that he's waited. He hates hearing this coworker of his like burning and sizzling.
Yeah.
So he takes a long walk. And after he's been gone a while, he's like, I'm sure the body is
gone.
Not scary to look at, but I'm just going to check. And then he looks inside and he is totally unaffected and is smiling.
Yeah,
it said
he was sitting there calm.
Right.
And I didn't know if that meant like he's a little dead guy or he's alive and fine.
Yeah, what do you think would be a scare? Like, would it be scarier to see kind of a Freddy Krueger burned up person in there or a completely unaffected, comfortable person in there?
I think scarier to see a Freddy Krueger guy.
Yeah, yeah, no, that sounds right.
What about you? You think that also?
Yeah, I think there's something, not to bring it back to Not Scary Farm, but always to bring it back to Not Scary Farm.
You gotta.
Were you there the year there was that haunted house where you're like walking through hell, but then you turn a corner and it's like completely silent and it's like a white waiting room hallway with a receptionist with whited out eyes, but who's like in a white uniform, just like looking and smiling at you?
No.
And that was, I think, the scariest.
No, I don't like that.
That really scared me.
And that sounds real.
And that is real.
That could happen.
Heaven is for real.
Heaven is for real.
Yeah. This is a podcast funded primarily by Angel Studios.
Yeah. What's gay about this? Working hard.
Working hard at your job.
Working hard.
Being a good coworker is canonically gay.
Yeah. Asking an unfair promise of someone you're not close with.
Yes. Yes. Wow. Oh, an important promise.
You should not ask someone of this.
Yeah, oaths are gay.
Oaths are gay. Having a lot of big hungry dogs.
That's having multiple huskies, I do think. That really it kind of goes around to being so straight that it's gay again.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, like even if you're straight, you're poly. Right, right. You're under the umbrella. Right.
You like attention is what the thing is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, huskies. And it's because huskies are they're loud vocal dogs.
Yeah.
And
speaking of, there is a dog who's having a real song moment in the courtyard.
Should I close this window? Maybe I should close it. Okay, that's good.
Well, I feel sad.
Yeah, there's Here's what I'll say about some folks in our building. It's a lot of, as Chris and I call them, the TikTok teens, which is probably unfair. These are probably people who are 26, 27.
That's teen.
They all have Billie Eilish's haircut from 2018, mm-hmm. which is really confusing because it feels like it's both outdate, but like, I don't know. And they all are getting dogs that they don't know what to do with.
Yeah.
And one of them, speaking of scary things that could happen, I got in an elevator one time in this building, and there was the most tiny person with a huge dog literally like snarling and jumping at me in the elevator. And I was just sort of like, no, like fine, not making eye contact. Like, okay. And as we're going down, like it's getting, the leash is getting more and more precarious and the dog is freaking out more and more. And then this person said to me, do you want to get off? Like, not passive aggressively or meanly, but genuinely asking if I wanted to get off before the ground floor. And I was like, no, I think I'll be okay. But it didn't occur to me until after I left, like, such a wild thought.
No, she was asking you to leave.
Yeah, I think that is probably the truth.
She said, this is my elevator.
Yeah. And that was a time where I was like, well.
Or he. Come on.
I've seen this same dog owner and dog a few times, and every time, no matter how great the distance, the dog is lunging at me as though I'm approaching like Stranger Danger style with a sack over my back and a Stetson hat and like a, you know, an anarchist bomb
for sure.
Yeah,
that's their job. I heard someone who is 24 say something about most millennial parents are bad. But have you seen a Gen Z person with a dog? Oh my God.
Buckle up, everybody.
Buckle the fuck up. That dog is running the household. I'm not saying we're good. I'm definitely not saying we're better. I'm saying get two sessions with a trainer.
Yeah. Not me getting eaten by my dog, fam.
And now we will get cremated on the lake. Yeah. That's, it's time. Andrew, do you prefer being too hot or too cold?
Always too cold.
You prefer?
I really prefer always.
Say more.
I used to be worried about myself when I was a teenager and in my early 20s, that no matter how much I was exerting myself, I was not sweating. And I kept being like, am I doing something wrong? Like, is something wrong with me that I'm not sweating? And then around 27, the story changed. And it really, if I'm hot, I'm Swamp Thing. And I just don't want that.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
I think I I think I feel much more comfortable in colder climates. I grew up in Florida, and so that the heat really is kind of treated like the enemy there. It's trying to kill you, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think what here's what I'll say. I think what's wrong with me is that even if it is kind of cold outside, I need the air conditioner on.
Yeah. Oh, that's another thing that's gay about this, not liking being cold.
Yeah, that is
despite
true.
What you just said.
That I do feel some distance from a lot of my queer brethren for that matter.
I know.
With like, I can't wait till it's 95 degrees. I'm like, who are you?
You'll go to Palm Springs, but like not like that, you know?
Yeah. And that's why the bear community was formed. It really was about temperature. Really was about temperature.
We need to get on the same page. Yeah. The hanky code does not cover this.
Anna, what is scarier to you, being cold or being hot?
Wow, that's a great question. A lot of things are classically cold that are scary.
Yeah.
Like the grave.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of ghosts are in winter.
Yes.
I would say winter is more ghosts than summer.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that most skeletons are kind of hot, like temperature wise.
Yes. Yeah.
A ghost is cold and a skeleton is hot.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
we're talking about attractiveness.
Yeah. 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 Ghosts are like pretty, but skeletons like hot.
Ghosts are about face. Skeletons are about body. Yaddy yaddy.
Neither one of them have ass.
No. For ass, what do you need? Zombie?
Not even, because that's where you eat. That's the first part you eat.
That's true. Mummies, maybe mummies.
No,
are
wrong. They're all shrivied.
I mean, I hate to. It's got to be werewolves.
Werewolf.
Yeah,
they're the quads,
lunging. The they're glutes. Climbing.
Yeah.
Muscle.
Dogs don't have butts. Wolves don't have butts.
But werewolves
have butts.
It is so funny how...
We're going to make ourselves furries if we're not careful. I think this is how it happens.
Well, this comes up so often. And I think it is... I've told you that like I tweeted this thing years ago that maybe every 6 months the furry community finds and really seizes upon it. And that makes me happy. I'm thrilled to be an ally to that community. But it's that thing that the Bailey School Kids book, Werewolves Don't Go to Summer Camp, which to me, in retrospect, I was like, oh, that was sexually formative. I think they're accessing it from like, because he's a werewolf, he's hot. You know, that's not quite my entryway to it.
He was just hot.
Right. They're like, let's talk about him as a werewolf, which as a werewolf in the book, he is not sexualized.
Mm.
But in the 20th century, we just decided to make werewolves hot.
Yeah, it was the last crusade. No, I guess zombies becoming hot is what people have tried to do.
Yeah, but it's hard to make rot hot.
No, we're not making rot hot.
It does feel like vampires and werewolves. I feel like vampires, you like brooding good bone structure models. Werewolves, you like himbos. And that feels like kind of the bless you, Jason.
Bless you, babe.
That feels like kind of the divide.
Babe. It's gonna be okay, right? That's what I'll do now when someone sneezes and say, it's gonna be all right. It's okay, don't worry about it. Happens to all of us. Andrew, the story, The Cremation of Sam McGee, mm-hmm. very spooky. It's a poem.
It is a poem.
And it is still a story though.
Right.
And it's a story about like a last request mm-hmm. for your remains. And I remember you telling me that you actually have purchased a plan for your last remains.
Yeah. The sad thing is that I really was gung-ho about it happening and was about to put that money down. And
no.
Well, Chris and I have to talk about it a little bit more. For those of you who are just for those of you who are not familiar with
we're
this
just
happening,
joining my grave.
Yeah, this was I was visiting my parents in Florida, which famously is 3 hours ahead of California.
Uh huh.
And we were just going through their like plans for the future, And they were like, well, we want to get buried in a cemetery in New Hampshire, but we heard that it was all full up. And I was like, I'm just going to call them and see if any have opened up. Sure enough, I call.
Calling a cemetery is scary.
It was. And when someone picked up, I was kind of starstruck. I was sort of like,
whoa, cool. Yeah.
And they were like,
it's like seeing a real Dalmatian in a fire station. Yeah. Whoa.
This is your job?
Yeah.
And the lady was so nice. She knew because my grandma's buried there. She knew of our family.
Oh.
And it's a tiny town. It's a tiny cemetery. So there was not much space. And she was like, I hate to be, I hate to be morose, which is so funny to say as someone who runs a cemetery. But she's like, we've had some openings in the cemetery because, over the pandemic, if people died elsewhere, it was going to be too complicated and difficult to get them here. So they were just buried elsewhere. So we have a couple openings. And she was like, we have two Lakeview plots, which is so funny to me.
Demented. Great. Demented, love it.
And my parents want to be cremated. So I was like, great, I'm going to reserve that one spot. And she was like, and would you like to, she's like, it would be $500 to put in. To reserve the other spot. And I was like, oh my God, that's great. So I was like, yeah, let's put a hold on that for now. I'll contact you later. And, but like for my parents, we'll give the money right now. And I hung up the phone and I called Chris with the like excitement and energy of someone calling to be like, we have two front row tickets to Wicked. Like this was gifted to me. And I called
the
Chris.
The lamest example of what dev tickets for. That rocks.
I know. Yeah. Wicked in 2004.
Oh.
Yeah. So I call Chris. I'm so excited. He picks up. And as I'm telling him all this, I realize that it is 10 a.m. in Florida. So it is 7 a.m. in California. And I'm explaining that there's this plot. It's only $500 to reserve it, and we don't have to use it, but it would be nice just to like have it there. It's a Lakeview. And I'm like, so what do you think? And there's like a pause, and Chris goes, I think it's too early in the morning for me to know about this. And he was like, you do whatever you want to do.
Abundantly fair.
I just never want to talk about it. And I was like, okay.
Abundantly fair.
Yeah, it was very fair. You cannot call your spouse before 9 a.m. with burial plans.
Yeah.
That's the rule.
That rocks.
Yeah. So I think that plot is gone. I think it's gone. But
oh, I see.
We'll figure it out. Yeah, yeah. I don't know. Does this ever come up between you two about
only what when the plan I think is? About how you guys like found a good deal on where you wanted to go. It comes up. I'm a big Hollywood Forever Cemetery fan. Yeah. I just really like it.
Yeah.
I like walking around it. I like that it's a mix of people's like grandparents and like Ramones.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Famous people and just like laser engraved portraits of like women with big earrings. And I love palm trees. I love that there's feral cats. I love that there's peacocks. I think it's all good.
Yeah.
And I walked there recently and I was like, I kind of want to, I'm always like, I fucking shouldn't. It's so crazy. I shouldn't. But I've thought about either getting a plot at Hollywood Forever or at Greenwood Cemetery in Brooklyn, which is where I used to live.
Also beautiful.
Not in the cemetery, you silly goose. Near it.
Imagine if this is how all of you listening learned that Anna lived in a cemetery for
I've just forgotten to say, like, we watched The Mummy Returns 8 times on this podcast, but I didn't mention living in a cemetery.
Yeah. So, like, somehow that is conspicuously missing from your Wikipedia page.
Yeah, it's not there.
It's just a little question mark near source.
Yeah. But it is, it's one of those, to your point about Lakeview plots.
Yeah.
Like, you're paying so, it's the same thing as real estate.
I know.
Where if it's in somewhere cool in New York or LA, you're paying like $5,000 to be in a little farty corner next to the toilet.
I know. Yeah.
And then if you want to go in the ground with a rock over it,
God help you.
Get it.
Yeah.
That's $25,000.
I know. And that, but I guess to me, I'm thinking it sort of depends on how I what I plan on leaving behind. Because I think you book a burial. I booked it. you reserve your grave with the thought in mind of like, what sort of experience do I want to leave the people who are coming to visit me?
Yeah.
It's kind of like when you pay to get an Amazon gift wrapped, where you're like, does this matter? Does anybody care? But then you're like, but I want to put in a little extra effort.
Yeah.
I can see you at Hollywood Forever.
Oh, thank you.
Or Greenwood. Both beautiful, iconic cemeteries that people enjoy spending time in, which I think is kind of the Victorian ideal of a cemetery.
It's very flashy. Yeah, somewhere you can have a picnic for sure. I'm trying to find a picture. I just went for a walk in Hollywood Forever recently because I'm working at a lot over there.
Oh, fun.
And I found the grave of Mrs. Louise Emmons, actress, March 6, 1935, quote unquote, unforgettable. I looked her up and she looks like an Andrew Farmer character.
Oh, good.
And I can't believe you weren't like, oh yeah, Louise Emmons. That's like the first time I've mentioned a...
Yeah. She was the body double for Alf. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. We're definitely two in the same. What are her big credits?
I'm so glad you asked. The Last Egyptian.
Okay.
Polly Redhead. These are movies from like 1725.
Unforgettable.
White Eagle. The Little Rascals. In Mush and Milk, she played Cap's wife.
Nice.
Mark of the Vampire.
Oh, I've seen that movie.
The Return of Shandu, starring Bela Lugosi.
Yeah.
I Believed in You, Street Beggar. Nana. Fugitive Lovers.
That was a life role. That was not the film she was in. Yeah.
Wait, this is a great title. Roman Scandals. Like Roman candles, but scandal.
Oh, that is good.
Oh, she was in King Kong. Okay, I'm going to pivot. Here are the names of the characters she's played.
Great.
Old Gypsy Woman, Sisiba, Street Beggar, Old Woman at Stage Door, Pittsburgh Bus Station Newspaper Hawker, Roman Citizen, Cap's Wife, Old Woman in Line at Mission, Prisoner Jesse Jones, Idlewood Resident, Woman in Montage, Jenny Gibbs, a.k.a. Pig Woman, Cackling Hag in New York City Bar, Maggie... There we go.
Here's the name.
Paradise Club Table Guest. Passerby in Front of Theater. Old Hag in Dungeon. Old Prisoner with Vodka. Villager. Peasant. Old Hag. Women Receiving Apple. Old Woman on Street. Gypsy Hag.
Oh.
Undetermined Secondary Role. She booked it. Gypsy Woman. Old Woman. Woman on Prison Ship. Beggar. Smiling Hag. Headmistress, Frontier Woman, Newspaper Vendor, Old Woman, Old Lady at Mission, Undetermined Secondary Role, Bicycle Race Spectator, Mother Lamonti, Undetermined Secondary Role, Elderly Israelite, Gypsy Fortune Teller, Villager, Old Woman on Staircase, Old Fortune Teller, Villager, Prison and Maiden Laundry Sequence, Mercedes Dueña, Madre Gomez, Uncredited. Oh.
Anna, this feels like... what you should do if you're ever on a Comedy Central roast of some, but like just go down the panel and calling everyone each of these things, I think is great.
French mother, bidding farewell, washerwoman, mysterious woman, stone ear. I actually can't say the name of this.
Uh-oh.
At the top.
Oh my God. I guess I can say it. The character's name is F*** Carrier.
It's called The Bride's Play. Irish lass is torn between the poet who seduced her and the nobleman who truly loves. We're back to Irish poetry.
Wow, and we came right back
chills.
To it. And birth name, Sharon O'Mahony?
Oh.
Wow.
You know, teacher.
Let's bleep it. Yeah, so I'll basically, bleep it. So well, the character she played was F. Slur Carrier.
Yeah.
Which, again, is a great read.
One of Bridget's relations, tenement dweller, shipwreck survivor, widow service, one of Bridget's relations. Tilga, keeper of the harem.
One of Bridget's relations?
She also... Bethulian, begging for food. And she also, at some point, was credited just as Mrs. Emmons.
I love when she occasionally gets to play someone with a name.
It's really nice.
Have you, like, I guess all my IMDb credits, I think most of them are people without names.
Oh, yeah. I'm like woman with clipboard.
Incredulous cowboy.
That's right.
Naked swaying woman.
Undetermined secondary role.
Factionless somebody from the film Allegiant.
That's right.
HR person one. And yeah, it's hard to get a name. It's hard to get a name.
Yeah, it's like stick in a mud who's there to be a pill at a desk.
Yeah,
that's both of us. Yeah.
It tells you more. It tells you more about the character.
It does. Wow.
I'm really delighted by the journey we went on this episode, Anna.
I am too. It felt organic and nice.
Yeah. And to Mr. O'Mahony, if you're still out there, and even if you aren't, sending you my very best. And everybody else,
get out.